It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
All right, time is 10:05. Snoop Daniel, Light the Tower, Craig and Jeff en route. If you don't know where Austin Radio Network is located in the ATX, it's off of Highway 360, which is a highway, but it has like 10,000 lights. So when a light goes awry, it's a crawl, and both are en route to the studio. So I'm holding it down briefly. You will get your Craig and Jeff fix. They are not on campus. It's going to be smooth and clear as far as the reception, because they'll be live and local here in the studio, and that's how I like it. You know, it's ARN really does put in the work, going live and local, 6 a.m. through the evening time, starting with B&E through the day, and then with Ball Don't Lie, and then the plethora of shows, including Rick Epstein, and I don't know if it'll be Sean Clinch or Jeff Power in with Rick Epstein tonight, but under the lights. 7 o'clock right here on the Horn. We love high school athletics, and we love the Longhorns, obviously, by our name, the Horns. Real quick, I'm just going to recap the Cowboys game, or excuse me, the team that the Cowboys are playing next week, and that will be the L.A. Rams. They get the big 24-7 dub over San Francisco last night. If I'm not mistaken, 7th straight win for the Niners over the Rams. So apparently San Francisco has something over L.A. And I mentioned that game last night because the Cowboys do play that same team on short rest. It's a 3:25 kick time here on the official, well, it's not the Dallas Cowboys flagship. That would be the station in Dallas, but the home of the Dallas Cowboys radio home in Austin, 104.9 The Horn. 3:25 is the kick. Of course, 3 o'clock pregame. I love the Cowboys. Like, it's with my family, I am from Dallas originally, and anytime that the Cowboys are dubbing, it's a good thing. And just kind of looking forward, I know there's a lot of Philly Eagle fans in the area that, you know, there's a lot of anti-Cowboy fans, but a lot of Philly fans for some reason. My homeboy, he's a police officer. Officer Basil loves the Eagles. Well, the Cowboys get the Eagles in a night game on Sunday, October 16th. Then on the 23rd, Cowboys host the Lions. They'll host the Bears on the road at the Packers, and then on the road at the Vikings. So potential, you know, if you're in second in the NFC East right now, if you would have said coming into the season with Dak going down in that first game that the Cowboys would be 3-1 right now with a legit shot to win these next few games and could potentially be 6-1. So as a Cowboys fan, that makes me happy. UT Longhorns, they're back in action. Of course, it's Texas OU weekend. And it's strange in the ATX because there's a lot of folks headed up to the is it called the Red River Rivalry, the shootout? I'll get the official name from the official voice, Craig Way, who will be here momentarily. But also this weekend is ACL Festival. So I am mostly a music fan. I mean, I got into radio to do music. I also love sports, and sports was kind enough to give me a career to actually stay in radio and make a living. But I love music. I have been to every ACL Festival, I want to say, since 2007, and that was when Ghostland Observatory headlined, and it was like it was so dusty and everybody got real sick, like black lung afterwards. So big weekend ahead in the ATX, of course, ACL Festival. But yeah, UT versus OU, who's going to run out there quarterback? Will Texas keep the win streak going, getting the dub over West Virginia last week? It should be interesting. All right, so just quick particulars coming up at 10:45. We aren't going to get flasted because it's not Friday, but we will get inconceivable. I don't know if Craig has a fast food item for us and inconceivable today, but I am hoping. And also, we always have our Longhorn notebooks, which are sponsored by Aaron Bowersock. Aaron Bowersock hooked Craig and his lovely wife Linda up with their home, and she can do the same for you. Longhorn notebook twice an hour, coming up with Jeff Howe here at the bottom of the hour. And yeah, that's how we do it on the two. Oh, and I guess we'll have the Whataburger top five, was actually the double sides with the 10. Craig?
You're about to get that.
Oh, good.
You're about to get that. But not yet.
Okay.
Thanks for stepping in there.
Oh, my lordy.
Careful, anybody that's on 360. coming from the north, it was over an hour. Just coming down 360 from 183. when you cross there on Capital Texas Highway, when you cross 183 there, over an hour to come down there. It was unbelievable. I left my home just after 8 o'clock this morning. It was I hadn't seen anything quite like that in a while. It was something else. So that's why I started sending texts when I could see the line backed up for a couple of miles in front of me. I started sending texts to Jeff and Snoop, and Jeff was running into a similar situation coming from the south about, hey, this is serious. This is really going to run us a little bit late here in being able to get through. So, yeah, anyway, thank you for handling that for us, Snoop Daniel. I appreciate that.
That always makes me nervous, but you always
say. That's why I'm trying to get, make sure to get to you quickly enough in advance to let you know what's going on and say, hey, by the way, you should know that things are going things are not going well. So anyway, and Jeff's here as well now. So in the immortal words of Dogberry the Constable from Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing, is our whole disassembly appeared? So we're here, and glad to have you. And coming up in a few minutes, Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers, will join us in our usual segment, so we'll have him. And D.C. Horn says, get Snoop his own show now. Did you do enough in that filibustering there to merit your own show? Was that
I doubt it.
Snoop has his own show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He actually does. So there you are. All right. So we are here.
I'm still pushing to get Snoop's name in the intro to this show. So no word on when that will happen. But
it's like Seinfeld. Y'all are Seinfeld and I'm Kramer.
Okay. All right. That's one way to look at it. We do have also coming up 11 o'clock hour, Greg Tepper, managing editor, Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine, joins us for our regular Tuesday segment, and we'll visit with him. So we've got all that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Tom McKay said, okay, had a spare if you needed one. So we're glad we're here. We're glad you're here.
I think he was talking about Snoop. I think that was an ACL wristband question.
Because I wasn't going to – I actually was so busy preparing for this football year, I did not apply for my press badge for ACL Fest.
Oh, like, man, the Chili Peppers are headlining this year too, aren't they?
I know.
They?
I don't know, like what I do when I go to a UIL game and I can't get in. I just forgot. I'm not going to just try to walk up and get in. But I've gone every year since 07, and this might be the – unless Tom going to hook me up.
Yeah.
Please. Man. I'll pay. I have some money.
I sort of say we know about your financial situation. So anyway, all right. Without further ado, let's get to our Whataburger Top 5.
Now it's time for the Whataburger Top 5.
Okay, prepare to receive.
Today's Double Meat with Cheese Edition.
Here we go.
Top 10 rankings.
We call it the Double Meat with Cheese Edition because, as you know, it's twice the size of our regular Whataburger Top 5, meaning it's a top 10 in the updated statewide rankings for classes 5A down through 1A, and it is a top 25 when it comes to 6A, because as we know, 6A does not separate into Division 1 and Division 2 until they get to playoffs. By the way, I've had some people ask me about that because we've been discussing quite a bit at length, with good reason, about the dynamics of what could happen to Vandergrift and what could happen, obviously, with it looking probable that Westlake's going to go Division One, those things, and who gets in, who gets out, and how it shakes up who goes Division One and Division Two. And I've had several people go, well, why is it like that in 6A? Because 6A votes to keep it this way because the way when it was split into divisions, and this happened over time, incrementally over time, it were travel concerns were the reason why. So they knew they could have district games close enough where they didn't have far-flung 300-mile-plus road trips, and there's still a few of those out in West Texas, but not many of those, and you could set up your non-district schedules to where it would work out. It was a financial reason. to be quite honest. Well, in 6A, you've got a lot of suburban school districts, and even those, they're in large metropolitan areas, so you don't have long travel for district games. For the most part, there's a little bit of it, but very little of it at 6A, and that's why they keep it like it is. Although we hear rumor every year that it may change, that it may wind up being 6A splitting into Division I and Division II before the season begins. For now, they like it like it is. You don't find out, you know, you don't split into Division I and Division II until you get to the playoffs. And like Greg Tepper and I were saying last week, you kind of like the suspense that builds into some of that as well. That's pretty cool. That's just kind of a byproduct that did it. All right. 6A top 25 as a result of that, the rankings in Dave Campbell's Texas Football Magazine. And the in this week's ranking, the top nine were made the same. Galena Park North Shore is number one, Westlake two, South Lake Carroll is third, then is Duncanville, Katy, Denton Geyer, Atascocita, Cibolo Steel, Allen, Arlington Martin moves up to number 10, DeSoto, Snoop's alma mater, up to number 11. Highland Park, despite their win, dropped two spots from 10 to 12. They got pushed by Jesuit, got up big, and then Jesuit made a real big push and only lost by a touchdown. Then, after that, numbers 13 through 21 remain the same as last week. Brennan, Spring Westfield, Shadow Creek, Dripping Springs holds at 16. Vandegrift holds at 17. Prosper, Round Rock holds at 19. Rockwall is 20th, Klein Kane 21, and then it's Klein Collins, Byron Nelson from the Trophy Club up there on the northwest side of the Metroplex is 23rd, North Crowley 24, and Summer Creek, which plays Galena Park North Shore this week. Summer Creek just gets into the rankings at number 25. So there is your top 25 in 6A. 5A Division I, and from there on out, it's a top 10. And the top 10, the top three remain the same. Longview, Mansfield, Timberview, Denton, Ryan. Port Arthur Memorial and College Station swap spots. College Station, which plays Cedar Park this week, is now number four in the state. Port Arthur Memorial's five, then it's Aledo, Frisco Reedy, Amarillo Atascosa, Lancaster, which dropped, actually went up a spot from 10 to 9 because they played Longview so tough. 2 weeks ago, they were off last week. They're 3-2, and Richmond Foster is number 10. 5A Division 2, and the top four remain the same. Argyle, Liberty Hill is still number 2. Fort Bend Marshall, Texas High of Texarkana, then Grapevine, which beat the previous top 10 team ahead of them, Colleyville Heritage, moved up from number 8 to number 5. Then it's Midlothian Heritage, Montgomery Lake Creek, Wichita Falls Rider, Alamo Heights, and South Oak Cliff back in the rankings at 3-3 after starting 0-3. The Golden Bears may be getting their footing now. In 4A Division 1, the top 7 remain the same. Stephenville, China Spring, Cal Allen, Burney, Allen, Salina, Lumberton, then it's Kaufman Canyon and Lindale to round out the top 10. 4A D2 rankings, the top two, Carthage and Gilmer, a little bit of shifting after that. Pleasant Grove of Texarkana is up to number 3, then it's Cuero, Silsbee, Belleville, Wimberley up one spot from 8 to 7, Wichita Falls, Hershey, Glen Rose, and Albury, the top 10 there. 3A Division 1 is exactly as it was last week. Franklin, Mount Vernon, Columbus, Grandview, Malakoff, Bushland, Breckenridge, Winsboro, Llano holding at number 9, and Cameron Yeo number 10. 3A Division 2 top 10 rankings. Also, identical to a week ago, Gunner, Holiday, Newton, Bells. By the way, there's going to be something that changed because Gunner's playing Bells this week, number 1 against number 4. Canadian, West Rusk, Poth, Palmer, Lexington holding at number 9, and Wall number 10. 2A Division 1. Also identical, Timpson, Hawley, Crawford, Shiner, Refurio, Coleman, Stratford, Cisco, Toller, who plays Coleman this week, so you have 6 versus 9 this week, and Centerville at number 10. 2A Division 2, the smallest of the 11-man divisions, like the other one, all the top 10 identical from a week ago. Mart, Burton, Wellington, Wink, Chilton, Price Carlisle, Santo, Bremond, which plays Chilton this week, so that's number 5 against number 8, Albany and Granger at number 10. They play Iola this week. And finally, the 6-man divisions in Division 1. It is unchanged. Abbott, still number 1 in the state. Westbrook, May, Jonesboro, Rankin, Happy, Garden City, Irion County, Gordon, and Medina, and 1A, six-man Division II. There's been one change there. The top four remain the same. Benjamin, Richland Springs, Cherokee, and Balmoray. Oglesby up to six. Lorraine drops from five to six after losing to Benjamin. Then it's Sanderson, Whitharrell, Paducah, and Rising Star. So there it is, your top tens in 5A through 1A, and your top 25, your Whataburger Double Meat with Cheese edition. And as has been pointed out also, the one other thing to keep number two, Gilmer, number three, Pleasant Grove play this week. Yes, we're going to have a reporter out there for the television show on Friday night, and it will be a good one. I definitely think that will be one of the better matchups in the state. So keep that on. Somebody said they love the big school, little school split. Yeah, it was done with financial considerations in mind there to save on travel. Eventually, it may make its way to the 6A classification, but they seem to be fine with standing pat right now. All right, before we get to our break, let's then have Hank Carter join us. Let's get to our Longhorn Notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
You want to do it afterwards, Jeff?
Yeah, I thought that's what we were doing.
We can do it afterwards. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll visit with Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers. We'll do that here on Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app. This is Light the Tower on the Horn. Craig Way, Jeff House, Snoop Daniel alongside. It's time now for our weekly coach conversation here on this Tuesday, brought to you by Texas Truck and Trailer. And glad to be joined, as always, on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline by our friend, the head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers, Hank Carter, is with us now. Hank, I appreciate the time. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Just got off the field, and it's been a good 2 days of work so far.
I always think whenever we talk about coming off an open date on the schedule, I think about something that Greg Davis, when he was the offensive coordinator at Texas, used to say. He used to say there are good redshirt years and not good redshirt years for some student-athletes, and there are good open-date weeks and not good open-date weeks, depending on how well the work went. How would you characterize what this open-date week just passed went for your ball club?
Well, I've always said there's no such thing as a bad time to have your bye week, but I would say I was especially excited about how our kids handled last week, and a lot of it had to do with it being about 60 degrees every morning, and the kids felt refreshed, and whenever the coaches walked off the practice field, we didn't have to go change a full set of clothes, and so the weather in general made it much more enjoyable, but also I just think the way the kids handled it and the amount of work we're able to get done was good, so I feel like it was a really successful week.
Do you alter that much, at least in terms of the workload schedule, on an open date week as opposed to when you have a game week? Does much change there in terms of what you're trying to get refined or updated or polished or even installed during an open date?
Yeah, so it is a little bit different. And so we will take some time and install probably a chunk of plays or a chunk of concepts depending on when the bye week falls. You know, if the bye week falls week 10 or 11, you know, obviously you might not do that because it's the time of the season. But, yeah, so there's a chunk of practice that's used for just creating new concepts and installing new material. I would say overall the physicality of the week of bye week for the guys that are healthy, it's pretty rigorous. It's a little bit more like a spring ball type practice because we don't have a game to prepare for. And there's such a thing as staying in football shape. And that not only is that just our cardio and getting used to carrying the pads and all those things, but, you know, hitting and tackling and doing those things, you need to stay sharp and you need to stay doing it. And so we had some guys that we needed to rest up and get healthy, but for the most part, we got after it, and I feel like it was a good week.
Hank, I've held off this long asking you about Jacob Henry, and we've known Jacob for a long time since he was real little, coming up to the station and hanging out. But he's, you know, looking at your defensive stats through five games, he's one of your leading tacklers. We've seen him make the splash plays. What can you say about Jacob's development through these first five ball games?
I think he's played really, really well. We love Jacob. He's a leader on our team. He's a charismatic personality. He does such a fantastic job also just with the things unrelated to football and the way that he He understands that he's a leader within our community for the young kids. He's just he's kind of like the Pied Piper whenever the little kids come around. But on the football field, he really is. He's had a great season so far. On all the big guys, the first month of the season, it is a different animal on them from the standpoint of when it's 100 degrees and you weigh 275 pounds and up. Just the impact that the heat has on you is different. So now that the weather has cooled off, that really lets our bigger guys turn it loose more, and they're able to play more consecutive plays and still have a good burst. And so I think you're seeing that out of Jacob and Griffin Willis and our bigger guys. But yeah, certainly Jacob's had a great season, and thankfully he's just a junior, so we're going to get to have him around for a while. But yeah, he's just a stud. He's a delight to coach, and I love the depth.
Let me ask you this: is this kind of what you were referring to when you talked about the guys getting excited because the temperature's being cooler? Did you have your offensive lineman and your defensive lineman in mind when you were telling us that?
Without a doubt. So that it would be funny. Now, I spent a lot of time with the defensive line, and so we worked together with the O-line. And so the first 2 months of the season, every day, you can hear their feet squishing like they had walked through water. And that's just the sweat pouring down onto their cleats. And Jacob specifically came up to me Wednesday or Thursday of last week and gave me a hug after practice. And he just said, so one thing was unique about that. Not that he gave me a hug, but he gave me a hug and he wasn't soaked. Typically he is after a practice. And he also just said, golly, we're feeling so fresh. This is just a great week. And the big guys certainly appreciate it when the temperature gets out of the 80s and down a little bit cooler.
Visiting with Hank Carter, head coach of the Lake Travis Cavaliers, here on Light the Tower on the Horn with Craig Way and Jeff Howe and Snoop Daniel.
Coach, I wanted to ask you about Caden Leone. I mean, I think I know a lot about him. What can you tell us personally about Caden Leone?
Man, Caden is a great kid. So he is obviously he's not the biggest guy in the world. He kind of grew up playing on the B team. And, he caught our eye as a freshman. He was a tweener kid who probably could have played on the A team, but he just hadn't grown any yet. He was much, much smaller. But he reminded me a lot of Baker from the standpoint of physicality-wise, he hadn't quite hit his growth spurt yet compared to the other 18 players. But he could hold his own with everything else. And so he's a very twitchy athlete. He still plays three sports. He's a football, basketball, baseball guy. Does really, really well at all three. He could play a number of positions as a freshman. He played quarterback and he played safety and was a good safety. Coming into this year, we thought he was going to play, primarily wide receiver and play some quarterback. You know, with the injury to Bo, that's made his maturation process at the quarterback position kind of speed up. He's been banged up, though, all season long. He really probably feels the best this week that he has since coming into Martin. He's had a hamstring. He had the concussion earlier in the season. But, he's the guy that is a dynamic athlete that when he's healthy in space, the first guy probably won't lay a hand on him if he sees him coming. And so it's going to be great to get him back to where he can make those plays in the open field. And he's throwing the ball great. I mean, this morning he's zipping the thing around the field. And so I'm excited for him. He's a guy that I wouldn't say waited his turn, but he had to wait until his body kind of caught up with his football mind, and he's certainly done that.
Well, and to see the growth and steady improvement of his play has to make you feel better, even as you still hope and try to get Bo Edmondson back with coming off of that back injury.
Yeah, it does. And really, Caden, we know that he can pop back out there and play receiver and do those things, but the way he's gotten better at quarterback, that makes our whole team better. And I'm happy for him. I mean, obviously, every kid that grows up playing quarterback in Lake Travis wants to be the guy. But when you find out you're going to be the guy a couple of days before it actually happens and you're thinking you're going to be wide receiver, that's a little bit of that could be a shock to the system. But I love the way he's handled it. He's a tough kid, too. He's not very big, but he doesn't weigh a whole lot. But he's tough as nails, and he's had to be so far.
Hank, when you come off that bye week, I always like to ask our coaches we visit with about your scout team, because those kids have a pretty tough job and an important job getting you ready for a ball game each and every week. And any kids on your scout team really stand out to you for what you guys have done up through the bye week?
You know, there's a bunch of, but I would say specifically two guys on offense. And so Chasten did a kid that's gone back and forth from playing varsity and J.B. Black at quarterback. And also Tech Phillips. So Tech is a running back. We kind of have the running joke that you could drop Tech off the Empire State Building and he would bounce right up. You couldn't hurt him. That guy is like made out of iron. And so he plays running back on the scout team, and he does a great job every single day defensively. Aiden Shoddy, a defensive end, has done a nice job. And I do. I try to recognize those kids. As a matter of fact, I'm feeding them all Chicken Express right after school today, only for the scouts, the student trainers, and managers.
There you go.
the varsity guys, they don't get any of that stuff. But I try to show them some love every couple of weeks because I sure appreciate them.
There you go. Hey, Hank, we've had this conversation before about respecting the game, respecting your opponent, and respecting your efforts both on the practice field and on the field. Is that the ongoing message as you get ready to take on Del Valle this week?
Yeah, it is. Obviously, we're going to prepare to play Del Valle, and they do some things that hurt us, and they've got some really good players, and their kids are getting better every week. Certainly came off a tough game last week with Westlake, but at the end of the day, we've got, you know, every game that's worked out for us or hasn't, really it's been about us. It's been about the things we were able to do or the things that we were unable to do and didn't execute. So we're going to focus on Lake Travis, focus on the things that we can control, and go out there for homecoming on Friday night and play Del Valle.
The homecoming, are you excited about that? Are your kids excited about it?
They are. The stadium sold out in about 45 minutes, which is, for an athletic director, is a little bit frustrating, and all the people calling and they need tickets, but it's a good thing, too. We're going to have a great crowd. Certainly have some old guys come back, and we'll be able to see them maybe after the game, which will be good.
Hank, what do you do when you have a sold-out stadium and you start getting calls from people going, hey, I really wanted to come to the game this week? What can you say to people like that?
Well, so here's the problem. When you've been somewhere nearly 15 years and you've built all these relationships with parents and boosters and friends and former players, yeah, all of a sudden I didn't realize how many friends I had, and all of a sudden I need tickets. And so we're gonna depending on how things go with the other side, we'll open it up and sell some tickets on the visitor side later in the week. It's a good problem to have, obviously. Our student section, I want to say we're going to have 1,500 to 2,000. It's really about them and the parents of the kids that are performing inside their band, Cavaliers, cheer, football, and student trainers and managers. So I wish we, you know, one of these days, hopefully we'll have a little bit bigger stadium. But, again, it's a good problem to have.
There we go. Hank, I appreciate the time. Best of luck on Friday night. We'll look forward to the visit again next week.
You bet. Thanks, y'all.
All right. That's Hank Carter, head coach of Lake Travis Cavaliers. They play the Del Valle Cardinals Friday night. You can hear it on the horn on 104.9. Mark Honig. And Keith Moreland on the call.
I know.
With Bucky headed north, you know, to the Metroplex for Texas OU weekend. So, Bobby Keith Moreland there as the analyst on that one. And, of course, Stu Myrick on the sideline. So, it'll be Friday night, 7:30 kickoff. Our coverage begins at 6:30 with Flex, ATX pregame show with Snoop and the gang. And, you know, that's at 6:30. And with Snoop and Zach and everybody else. And then at 7:15, it's to the broadcast booth. It'll be the same thing on 105.3 The Bat for LBJ and Lassa. And I think it's Lassa's homecoming.
It is.
Yeah, on Friday night over at Nelson Field. So LBJ will technically be the visiting team, but you'll hear that broadcast on 105.3 The Bat. Dee Hansen and Steve Foster will have the call of that one on Friday night. So yeah.
I want to give that one a fancy bowl name, nickname, because I don't know. I thought the Rip Bowl, the whole Adam Eve Lassa split from
I don't know
LBJ.
That enough people would catch on to that, Snoop. I don't know that they would. Everybody wondered where the ribs were. Could they go and, or would they serve McRib? Or would they, you know, I don't know that anybody would kind of get into that deal as
I
much.
I like the efforts.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. No doubt about that.
We'll
and of course, when the Lassa school was still connected on campus at LBJ as it used to be. And, in fact, my son Jason had a good friend that was part of that was over there that Lassa school. When it was there, it could really kind of be. Now, of course, they moved into the old Eastside campus there Lassa has. But that'll be Friday night. And again, obviously Friday night, Vandegrift on Friday night. And the Vipers coming off the big win over Manor. And Vandegrift will have McNeil on Friday night, and that'll be at Monroe Stadium. That's a 7:00 kick, and then as we pointed out, Lake Travis 7:30 homecoming for the Cavs. If you don't have your tickets, might have a hard time trying to find one, as Hank just pointed out. As Lake Travis will host Del Valle.
Is Cavalier Stadium small?
Well, it's not gigantic.
Yeah,
you know. So, you know, it's like you said, didn't take them long to sell out. to get ready for that. Speaking of getting ready, we're getting ready now for the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook.
A notebook that is brought to you by Aaron Bowersock, the home loan expert. Check her out on the web at bowersockteam.com.
So in light of our technical issues yesterday while we were doing five plays that made a difference in the West Virginia game, I wanted to make
sure. You going to do it again?
No, I just wanted to make sure we gave a nice, you know, some substance to this notebook. So,
okay.
Craig, I will get you involved here in just a minute. But I wanted to start with giving props to Pete Kwiatkowski and the Texas defense. Yes, I know that's not a popular thing to do, but one thing I will credit Texas for, Craig, is I talked about it all week last week, like blitz more. And talking to guys after the game, you know, DeMarvian Overshone said, yeah, we've been telling PK, hey, blitz us more, send us more. We want to turn up the heat. Jalen Ford kind of echoed some of the same stuff. So if you look at Texas, Craig, when this defense has been really good this year, the blitz rates have been high. Against ULM, a 29% blitz rate on dropbacks. Against Alabama, they blitz Bryce Young about a third of the time, 32.6% blitz rate. And these are all me doing napkin math based on the data collected by Pro Football Focus.
That's a band, by the way, at ACL Fest, napkin math.
The blitz rate against UTSA, and I think this is the challenge for PK. How do you continue to bring pressure, to manufacture pressure, when you face a quarterback that has a legit dual threat element in his game? Because against UTSA, the blitz rate dropped down to about 22.4% facing Frank Harris. And the only reason it was that high was because when Eddie Lee Marburger came into the game, I think on six of his dropbacks, they blitzed him four times.
Right.
So that kind of skewed it a little bit. It was actually a little less than that with Frank Harris in the game. Against Texas Tech, drops down to 19.7%. We know the issues there. Against JT Daniels, 25% blitz rate. One in every four dropbacks, they were blitzing him. And you could see, looking at some of the other advanced statistics from that game, Craig, and this will bleed into some of the other numbers I want to talk about. Like JT Daniels, according to Bill Connolly at ESPN, breaking it down, yards per dropback, 4.6 for JT Daniels. That's nothing. That means, and you can look at his numbers when blitzed, it's a lot of short stuff. The average depth of target was his lowest on any throws, was when he was blitzed, I think about 7 yards per target. So really good job by the Texas defense to limit that West Virginia passing game, which brings me to the other point I wanted to mention. One thing that stood out in the Bill Connolly advanced box score, percentage of West Virginia's runs that went for 5-plus yards, only about 18.5% of their runs went for five. Wow. Or more yards. Texas defense was lights out against the run. And if you look, Craig, at yards per carry allowed, last year, the Texas defense, it was one of the worst in school history, almost 5.2 yards per carry allowed last season. They're at 3.28 right now. That's top 35 in the country in yards per carry allowed. You go to yards per play allowed. Remember, Craig, even like the Texas Tech game and even the lulls in the West Virginia game, I'm like, well, you're still giving up only 4.8 against Tech. You're giving up 4 against West Virginia. That's going to keep you in a lot of ball games. Texas last year, again, one of the worst marks in school history, 6.03 yards per play allowed. This year, Texas, through 5 games now, 4.73 yards per play allowed, Craig. That is top 25 in the country in yards per play allowed.
It's a big step forward.
Absolutely, 100%. So credit to Pete Kwiatkowski. I know everybody, it's been fashionable. It's kind of played out how I thought it would. When things are going great, you know, Gary Patterson can get all the credit. When things are going bad, Pete Kwiatkowski needs to be fired. But you know, spread the wealth a little bit. Give PK and his defensive staff some credit. The numbers are there through 5 games. The bigger the sample size gets. I do think, though,
Gary, by the way, has been active enough on social media to say, hey, come on. We're all in this. We're all in this.
Yeah,
for good, for bad, for whatever.
Exactly.
We're all in this.
So I would expect, though, regardless of who the quarterback is for Oklahoma, if it's Dylan Gabriel and – you know, checking our Oklahoma property at 24/7 Sports OU Insider, they're not expecting to know anything till later in the week just based on how concussion protocol works. So whether it's Dylan Gabriel, whether it's Davis Bevel, if it is General Booty, you got General Booty's name ready to go on your lineup.
How about
card
that?
For this week?
He'll be on the broadcast.
On the broadcast chart. Whoever it is, I would expect the blitz rate for Texas to be pretty high inside the combo. And again, go back to last year's OU game. Like, PK's initial game plan was really good, so good that it actually got Spencer Rattler benched, which then worked against you in a weird way, but we'll talk about that another day. But, Craig, I did want to talk about Oklahoma from this standpoint. This is a matchup of unranked teams. And, you know, you go back, I think 98 was the last time these two teams played where both came into the game not ranked in the AP poll. And I was not shocked but slightly taken aback by the number of Oklahoma fans and even some Texas fans. They're like, well, what was going on between, you know, in the mid-90s? Like, why was Oklahoma not very good? And I think, Craig, you've got to, and I think this speaks to some of the issues Oklahoma's going through right now with this culture reset they're trying to do with Brent Venables. I was a sophomore in high school the last time Oklahoma tried like a full-on head coaching change, culture reset. You got to remember, Brent Venables, yeah, he was at Oklahoma for a long time. He hadn't been there in 10 years.
Right.
So you got a guy coming in trying to definitely doing things differently than Lincoln Riley did. And when Lincoln Riley got the job, it was almost like, here's the keys to the Ferrari, don't crash it kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And he took it off. He took off with it, and Oklahoma continued to just put one Big 12 title after another in the trophy case. So I wanted to look back at kind of where, because I didn't think there's Oklahoma fans that don't understand where your program was before Bob Stoops got it to that point. And I go back to Gary Gibbs, Craig, and if you remember when Gary Gibbs took the job, Oklahoma was coming off probation at the very end of Barry Switzer's tenure. You can Google it and look at the whole deal when he resigned. Mm-hmm. There was a big Sports Illustrated article about how basically his players were terrorizing campus and everything. So Gary Gibbs gets the job, and basically Gary Gibbs got the job in the same way kind of Dave Campo got the Cowboys job. Remember those 5-11 seasons? Like, hey, we just need somebody to kind of navigate us through these next few years that are going to be a little bit rough. Congratulations, you got the job. Gary Gibbs wasn't terrible, 44-23-2, had a couple of 9-win seasons, but tied for second was their best finish in the Big 8 during that time. No AP poll finish higher than 17th. And you got to remember, too, Oklahoma's slide coincided with, that's when Nebraska under Tom Osborne
really, really good.
Really started to take off. Another program that people find really hard to believe that was really good at one time, Colorado. Under Bill McCartney, got really, really good. Won a national championship in 1990, was really good in the early mid-90s. Then you've got 1 year in 1995, Craig. Any memory stand out about the Howard Schnellenberger year at Oklahoma in 95?
Yeah. Tie game, 95.
He was 5-5-1. The one tie was against Texas.
21-0. The Longhorns were up in that ballgame. Ask Bucky Gobbold about that one. 21-0. How hard no money is to say Sooner Nation. That's the first time I ever heard, I think, the phrase Sooner Nation was
for that was
from,
his. That was his bit. Yeah.
Was in 95, and Texas had a 21-0 lead and settled for a 24-24 tie. It was really ironic. That's the last tie game that I called in college football, and Bill Schoening and I did. And then the next year was the first overtime one when Texas lost to OU 30-27. And it was so new then that the Longhorns won the toss and elected to take the football. Did not elect to go on defense, kind of like what Dana Holgorsen did the other day, and it backfired on him against Tulane. But Texas took the ball because it was so new and folks hadn't figured out you want to go on defense first to figure out what you need. And Texas wound up getting a field goal, and then James Allen had a touchdown run, and Oklahoma won the ball game 30-27.
So that 1996 Oklahoma team, Craig, was coached by one John Blake.
Yeah.
And John Blake's tenure was not very memorable. Other than that win over Texas in 96, two unranked matchups. Texas won both of those in 97. And then we all remember 98, the Ricky Williams, Doak Walker tribute game. And it wasn't. It was what 34-3, and it wasn't even that close.
No, and that was the 98-yard touchdown pass, Major Applewhite to Wayne McGarity. The year before in 97, when Bo struggled and Texas wound up 4-7, Texas won that game over Oklahoma. But DeMond Parker had a gigantic game running the ball for OU, and Ricky had a big game for Texas that day in 97.
I think that they both maybe go over 200 yards in that game.
Yeah.
But that's what happened, Oklahoma fans. You basically had Gary Gibbs kind of usher you through the probation years. You had Howard Schnellenberger for 1 year, and that didn't go well at all. And then you just made one disastrous hire with John Blake. That Craig, from let's call it 94-98, that very small run, that is the worst time period in Oklahoma football in my lifetime. Must be nice for about 4 or 5 years to be your downturn in my nearly 40 years roaming this earth. But there it is, Oklahoma fans. Yeah, your program was not very good. But here's what happens. This, with the exception of John Blake, and you can throw Schnellenberger in there even though it was only 1 year. Basically, since World War II, Oklahoma's made really good head coaching hires. Even though they have tended the really successful ones, whether it's been Barry Switzer or whoever, Lincoln Riley, guys that they've hired from within, they've tended to make the right hire. And this goes back to what Sark said yesterday. Look, Brent Venables is a heck of a coach. Oklahoma at some point, they're going to be okay. They're going to be fine.
I don't know that Gomer Jones fits on the. I remember he didn't do well. Jim McKenzie, they really like. He had a heart attack.
Yeah. Jim McKenzie had a hell of a staff too. Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson, a bunch of future head coaches were on that staff.
Somebody, you were talking about Barry Switzer. Somebody said, you mean Super Bowl champion Barry Switzer?
Yes, Barry Switzer.
We did it, Jerry. We did it, baby. Yes, that's your last Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl champion, by the way.
Players, but
that's your last Dallas Cowboys Super Bowl champion, by the way.
I was in the sixth grade, Craig. Don't remind me. It's last time. Last time I had so much as an NFC Championship game being a fan of the Dallas Football Cowboys. But I just think it's tough for OU fans because it's been so long since they've had to go. Like for Texas fans, it's old hat. Like OU fans kind of went through that time period of like convincing themselves that Brent Venables is better than Lincoln Riley, and you get this soft culture out of here. It's like, okay, if a quote unquote soft culture is going to lead to you winning the conference every year but one, in that 1 year you won 11 games, dude, sign me up for soft culture. Sign me up for some soft culture around here in Texas, where you've got three Big 12 titles and none since 2009.
All right, that's our notebook for this hour.
Just take a deep breath, OU fans. It's probably going to be all right.
Coming up next, we'll have Inconceivable as we continue to light the tower on the horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. Live, local, and digital.
Inconceivable.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Well, Snoop, when you had to open the program this morning because I was caught in an inconceivable traffic jam there on 360 because of signal light malfunctions up and down Capital of Texas Highway. I believe you mentioned right when I was walking in that we were going to have Inconceivable, which we are. And I believe that you also mentioned that you hoped, anyway, that we would have fast food.
Yep.
Right?
Because I sure am hungry.
Well, I got it for you. I've got one. But it might not. I don't know if this necessarily applies to you. I can't remember. Where do you stand on KFC?
It's good.
You're okay with KFC? Okay. Word is they're bringing back a menu item. You know, we're living in an age, Jeff, where these fast food establishments are now revisiting,
except Burger King,
their decisions to get rid of some menu items.
I'm down with KFC, not down with Hitler Fried Chicken.
Okay, this will be the regular KFC. It's not the Hitler fried chicken with the KFC logo in Thailand.
Right.
No, it's not that.
Not down with that at all.
It's not that.
Colonel.
Yeah, the Colonel, you all right?
Still want to know how one rose to the rank of Colonel by merely making delicious chicken.
Yeah.
One of life's great mysteries.
Well, you may remember this, Snoop. In the early 2000s, KFC had an item on the menu called KFC Twister Wraps.
Yes.
Okay?
Yep.
It's a huge hit among customers.
Was it in a tortilla?
Yeah, in fact.
It's a long and spirally.
I don't think I ever had one.
There it is.
Yeah, I definitely had some of those.
There it is.
How about KFC brings back the buffet? How about that?
I can do that. Pandemic killed off buffet.